Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our favorite columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, join us this week for the political year in review. Welcome back, Ken. You're having a good year?
It was. It was a good year. It was an interesting year. And now we look forward to the next one.
How does it feel to be known as the top political reporter in Albany?
Oh, that's not how I look at it. Look,
Well, you should.
I appreciate that. No, I mean, I put a lot of pressure on myself to have to deliver every day, so.
And you do, and it's amazing. So with that said, for the New York Daily News, let's go over some of the stuff that affects New York state politics and national politics. One, obviously, Donald Trump wins the presidency and sucks the life out of state politics. We don't hear anything about state politics because everybody's listening to Trump on CNN all day long, tweet and Twitter away.
It really is amazing with all the stuff that has happened this year. It is hard to break through the Washington chatter. Trump has, as you said, it sucked the life right out of Albany. No matter what happens. And for some people, that's a good thing, because when there's controversy and scandal, then that's not getting the attention it otherwise would have before Trump became president. For others, different causes and issues fall by the wayside for the very same reason.
And Ken Lovett, Trump obviously is a New Yorker. New Yorkers hate his guts. That is an understatement, if anything. Daily News covers him on a fairly regular basis, unlike their compatriot publication, who sometimes apologizes for the president and sometimes doesn't. It is extraordinary because I want to bring you to the tax cut plan and what happens in New York as a result of this tax cut.
Well, I think it is a different situation where you have a president who is from a certain state, and there's general agreement by a lot of people, including Republicans and Democrats and conservatives, that this tax plan could actually hurt New York State. It will help some in the middle class and the lower middle class, but it's going to, with this SALT, as it's known, the local and state tax deductions, by not making that deductible anymore, or at least not up to $10,000, there is a real fear that it could drive high-income earners, millionaires, out of the state to low-income areas. And why should that matter? Because they pay a lot of taxes to the state. And so ultimately, if those people leave, and we're not going to know this for a year or two, but if those people leave for lower tax states like Florida, then that could put a severe hole in the state budget that already this year is looking at a $4.4 billion deficit.
How did we get to that 4.4?
I think revenues are not what they were projected, and
Why? Obviously
spending went up. Why?
Yeah.
There was a slowing of the economy in New York. We just have not rebounded as quickly as the rest of the country in recent years. New York has lagged. You know, New York City is doing well. Upstate, however, has shed population. You're seeing, you know, places close. Jobs are leaving. So I think that has put a stress on the budget. And maybe projections were too high, but certainly whatever was projected is not coming in. The comptroller raised maybe some hope. You know, Wall Street is doing really well, and he feels, you know, the state fiscal year ends at the end of March. That's going to coincide in the first 2 months of when Wall Street bonuses are handed out. So perhaps we can make up some of that loss of revenue through the bonuses and the taxes on that. But if not, New York's looking at a potential $4.4 billion or higher deficit.
You mentioned the comptroller, and we know that the comptroller's relationship with the governor is not that good. He's been a pretty honest broker, right, in terms of calling it like it is.
Yeah, I think he certainly has. The Cuomo's, you know, like every time Tom DiNapoli puts something out, will not only trash the report, but trash DiNapoli or trash the integrity of the report rather than just debate it. But no, I think he has been pretty consistent in what he has focused on and what he has pointed out, and he hasn't been afraid to go after the governor and the governor's agencies.
Well, I must say, I think that's only fair, since the governor has been nothing but unkind about this very good public servant, Tom DiNapoli.
Right, but you don't get the sense that DiNapoli is doing it for political payback.
No, not at all.
And I think he just feels that he's got professional auditors and they're doing it. The governor likes to put out there that this is politics or it's whatever it is, but I don't think you can really pin that on DiNapoli.
And for a while there, it looked like the governor was going to try to, which he does with almost all his political rivals or other politicians, whether they're rivals or not, it looked like he was going to try to take even more powers away from the comptroller and give them to his director, whatever he calls it, financial services or whatever. That hasn't gone that far.
You know, they got some and they diluted the comptroller's power a couple of years ago when they took away his pre-audit capabilities of contracts. But, you know, he also has wanted to take away, right now the comptroller is one of the few sole trustees of such a large pension fund, and the governor has spoken out against that since he was attorney general, saying that it should be a board, not a sole trustee, but that has gone nowhere either.
Well, now the legislature comes into play in this relationship. It's interesting, you know, Tom DiNapoli, great favorite in the legislature. He gets elevated to the controller's position. There's one little blip about a guy who worked for him who did something wrong and he was dispatched. But DiNapoli's done it remarkably well, considering that that office had gone through some very rough times.
Yeah, well, and that's when Cuomo was the attorney general. He investigated the comptroller's office really for scandals that occurred under DiNapoli's predecessor, Alan Hevesy. And there was a huge pay-to-play scandal. A number of people either were charged or agreed to pay money, fines or went to jail. Hevesy went to jail. Hank Morris, his top political consultant, who somehow became a broker under Alan Hevesy, he went to prison. So it was a major scandal, and we haven't had anything like that widespread with DiNapoli. As you mentioned, there was one guy who has pled guilty. He was a top investment guy for DiNapoli. But beyond that, you know, he's been there, for 2-plus terms now, and because he came in the middle. And he's really had not had a lot of controversy.
No, and what's interesting is that the governor, has not been a friend for no good reason. I've never understood that. He just has so many enemies. Let's go to Trump's punishment of blue states. The SALT, deduction of state and local taxes in the GOP tax cut plan. It especially hurts New York, Massachusetts, where I live, California, Connecticut,
New Jersey.
These people, you know, are hating Trump with such a passion now.
The state, Trump's numbers are down, particularly in blue states, which is no surprise. It's not like New York came out in droves for their hometown guy. He got, 33% in New York. He still has pockets in New York where he is popular. They like him out in Suffolk County. They like him upstate in a lot of the areas. But certainly in New York City and the large population areas, his numbers are really down. They don't care he's from New York. They don't like his policies.
So then there are a couple of Republican congresspeople who are between the well-known rock and the hard place, because just what you said, if New Yorkers despise Trump, this is going to be a rough year, 2018, for Republicans. And they had, for example, John Faso, Elise Stefanik, and some others. They had to decide whether to go with the president on his punishment of New York, or whether to vote no on this. And several of them, who we suspect felt very uncomfortable about it, including Elise Stefanik, who voted no on the tax bill, but then offered a very spirited defense about what Trump was trying to do here.
Right, and Stefanik's argument basically was, I'm voting no, but mostly because New York is such a high-tax state, and we need in New York to get the state spending under control, and that, you know, what the president is trying to do is good, and yes, it would hurt New York, but in order to take care of that, you know, New York politicians have to do things to bring their spending, their budget under control.
Now, Ken Lovett, this is a time for predictions at this time of year. And now we have two people in the immediate area where we're talking from, but it's around New York State. There are several Republican congressmen. Do they face political extinction?
I think they face really tough challenges. Yeah, I don't know who's going to run yet specifically against them. So.
Well, that's a very important question, because if you got a 22-year-old who majored in political science mm-hmm. who wins the nomination to run against a guy like John Faso, the Democrats are in trouble.
Exactly. So, but I think Faso and Stefanik and Lee Zeldin out in Suffolk County and maybe even Claudia Tenney, Katko, I think those people will have challenges and are in jeopardy. Certainly, that's one of the reasons you saw people like Faso and Zeldin and Pete King and Long Island and Stefanik vote against the bill, the tax bill, because they know that was going to be used against them.
But don't you get the idea that Pete King, who is really quite a character, Peter King on Long Island, unlike the other guys, didn't put his finger up in the wind to see which way the wind was blowing. He just has some very definite thoughts and voted no, emphatically.
I do. And I also think that the House leadership, recognizing the situation and knowing they had the votes to pass the bill, gave the out to these New York and
let them off the hook.
Yeah, let them off the hook and said, yeah, you can vote no. And that we see that here in Albany on votes, where sometimes members of the majority will vote against a majority bill, but they usually have permission to do so as long as it's going to vote and knowing that it could hurt them politically to vote with the conference, they'll let them off.
Don't you love the journalists who are looking for a column or something, you know, who write things? I saw one this morning that said, they're between a rock and a hard place. Baloney. They got permission. They asked permission from their, I don't want to use this word lightly, but masters, and we're told, okay, you know, we want to save your seat, so we're going to let you do it.
And look, you did not see, you heard them raise concerns, but you did not see John Faso. You didn't see the others who voted against it. And this is something the Democrats said. They weren't out there leading the charge against it. You know, if they were asked, they said, we have concerns. But, if they were very much, Pete King came out forcefully and was saying things, you know, this is going to kill New York, blah, blah, blah. You know, he felt, like you said, he had conviction with it. I think the others knew they were going to vote no, but they also weren't out there leading the charge against it.
Okay, Cuomo has to run for governor, so, pardon me, a little Freudian slip, for governor in 2018. The way I see it is he can't lose a general election against a Republican in that year, but he could have some problems in a primary if there was a credible candidate against him.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough opposition on the left to defeat him as of right now, where we are in late December. But I do think it is an issue if he has a challenger. Potentially it could hurt him. But, you know, the reality is the Cuomos will argue that he is not popular among what he calls the professional left, which they say is different than the regular left, you know, that these are people paid to oppose different things. And the numbers have bore that out. Basically, every poll that comes out shows he is still popular among liberals, self-proclaimed liberals, and he's still popular in New York City. As long as those numbers hold, he should be fine in a primary. However, there is one interesting thing that could happen that could actually benefit the Republicans, and that is the Working Families Party. Because if the Working Families Party, which is no fan of Cuomo, almost didn't give him the nomination for a year in 2014 when until Bill de Blasio helped work out a deal. The mayor
for God knows what reason.
Yeah, well, he thought it would get him political chits. Obviously, that didn't work out. But if the Working Families Party holds to its guns this time and actually nominates someone different than Cuomo, and then you have the Green Party who would have someone different from Cuomo, that could take away enough votes on the left that a Republican wouldn't need 50% to win. They would need maybe 44, 45, 46%, and depending on who that candidate is. But certainly that could damage the governor and actually throw a wrench into his likely victory.
And along comes, Franz Kafka aside, the trial.
The trial, which governor goes into 2018 looking to run for reelection. He's probably feeling good. And then the trial of one of his closest aides, now former aide, one of his, a man he said his father viewed as a third son, Joe Prococo. And we don't know what's going to come out of that. The governor recently said he doesn't expect to testify because at one point that was a possibility. But depending on what comes out of that, and it's going to be a multi-week trial, that could certainly hurt the governor. It could certainly give ammunition to his political foes. We're going to see. But it's going to be an interesting time. But again, what we opened with was with Trump sucking all the air out of the room, you got to wonder how much the trial is going to actually stick to the governor with people looking at Washington, not necessarily Albany.
Well, Ken Lovett of the Daily News. Interestingly, the guy who brought that indictment against the Cuomo pals, and I say pals with an S, was canned by the president. And that's Preet Bharara, who now shows up on CNN almost every night and has become even more of a monster for Trump, I suspect, and maybe for the governor.
He's not a fan of the governor by any stretch.
No. So Preet Bharara gets canned since we're doing what happened in the past year by the president. What are the implications for New York?
Well, look, the president originally asked Bharara to stay. And then,
yes, he's a lying liar.
Well, he asked him to stay. Bharara said, yes, I want to stay. He came down during the transition and spoke to the media. Bharara did, said, president asked me to stay. I'm staying. And he stayed. But then there were reports that Bharara maybe was looking into, you know, actions by the president or was forwarding information about the president to the Justice Department. And suddenly Trump did what really any president has the power to do, which was he asked every U.S. attorney to resign.
Including Bharara, who said he said he had asked to stay.
And, right. And Bharara said, I'm not resigning. You're going to have to fire me. So Trump said, OK, you're fired. and that was the end of pre-Bharara. His office, the people he worked closest with are still in that office and still running things. But Bharara has become a critic. He's got a podcast now, says he's not going to run for public office, but he's certainly out there a lot.
And Bill de Blasio, we have to talk about him. You know, here was a mayor of New York. It was unclear why these two guys, Cuomo and de Blasio, were so hateful towards each other. I've always felt that Cuomo was the one who was picking on de Blasio, not the other way around. There are those who disagree with me, but now we're seeing more. De Blasio is out there in the hinterlands in places like Iowa, you know, where the early Democratic primaries are. So it looks like these guys could be spoilers for each other, like Lindsay and Rockefeller were.
Yeah, well, look, and then throw in Kirsten Gillibrand, who's having her moment right now.
That's right.
And she probably, I spoke to a Democratic consultant even before the governor had some recent problems in the last couple of weeks, who said that of the three of them, he thinks Gillibrand would have the best shot of coming out of New York. Doesn't mean she'd be the candidate, but of three from New York, he felt Gillibrand was better positioned than Cuomo or de Blasio. Now, de Blasio and Cuomo always, you know, they were close for a lot of years. De Blasio worked for Cuomo when he was the HUD secretary, but you know, they never were in a situation before where they had, if not equal power, they both had power. And the governor, as we've said on the show many times, doesn't always play well in the sandbox with others, including fellow Democrats. And he and the mayor, right from day one, started feuding over how to pay for expanded pre-kindergarten, full-day pre-kindergarten in the city. The mayor wanted to raise taxes, which the governor, in his election year in 2014, was not going to do. And it started from there and just kept going. Now, the mayor this year was safely reelected by a wide margin. Wasn't a huge turnout, but he won by a wide margin to a second and final four-year term because he's term limited out. And people close to him say he is now feels unencumbered and will be speaking out more frequently and more forcefully about the governor. And we saw that a couple of weeks ago where he basically, when the governor's allies put out a deal to try and reunify the fractured Senate Democrats, you know, de Blasio came out and trashed the deal and said it was only done because of the governor's presidential ambitions. And really said he had since 2011 to do this. Why now? And I think we're going to be seeing more of that from de Blasio. Cuomo put de Blasio through hell for a lot of years. And now going into his election year with de Blasio safely reelected and Cuomo now facing the voters again, I think you're going to see de Blasio try to make his life a little more like hell.
Interesting. One of the reasons we're running out of time here, but Ken Lovett, but one of the reasons that there has been such fury. What there is against Cuomo is because of his handling of the subway system. First, he tried to blame it on de Blasio, and then he tried to blame it on the legislature. So in the end, is he sort of saddled with this thing now?
I mean, most people, well, I don't know if most people know, but the governor controls the MTA, which runs the subway system. Yep. And he has said it's going to be mine, and he declared a state of emergency on the subway. But recently, last week, he said that that it was the legislature's fault. They haven't properly funded the MTA for 20 years. No one bought that, and I think the governor is going to put in a plan in his budget proposal for some type of congestion pricing with the revenue coming in from that.
Congestion pricing means when people come into New York, they pay a little more.
If they go to certain busy parts of Manhattan, they will pay more, or they will pay tolls to begin with.
And, of course, the upstate Republicans hate that because of their commuters.
And the Long Island and the suburbans and the outer boroughs.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see that. But Cuomo is going to put that in with the revenue generated going to the MTA, and he's going to challenge the legislature to do it, because you're not going to see a millionaire's tax, which is what the mayor wants, to fund the MTA. That's just not going to happen.
We only have a couple of minutes, but the Constitutional Convention goes down. I thought it would go down. I think you thought it would go down.
I was surprised how big it went down. 72%, I think, voted against it.
Yeah, okay. So that's enough of that. Okay, let's talk about Karen DeWitt. The governor blows his top at Karen DeWitt the other day, has to apologize. And in a conversation, she's a beloved figure in New York Public Radio and everywhere else, great reporter. I was less fascinated by that event than that he was so compelled to do something because he really didn't know how to handle her.
No, and what people have told me, I recently had a column on that right afterwards, which basically said that it was an example for male politicians nationally of how not to handle the issue of sexual harassment questions.
And he may have the same problem, I'm thinking, with Kirsten Gillibrand, who will be a rival. It's one thing to vote to pick on Bill de Blasio, another male, but here comes Gillibrand, and maybe, as you said, a real serious rival for the presidential nod. What's he going to do with her?
That's a good question. And you know, if you remember when Rick Lazio was running for U.S. Senate against Hillary Clinton, and he charged the podium asking her to sign some pledge to forego dark money or soft money, and he looked like he was really towering over her. And Cuomo has a very forceful personality, and he's been having more and more trouble of late keeping that in check. And
But I think indicates that he's worried.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, look what he did, you know, when he tore into the legislature over the MTA, you know, and then his people were backtracking and calling up and saying, well, he was really focused on one guy, Senator Mike Gianaris, but that's not what he was talking about. He talked about the legislature. Yeah. And after he did the thing with Karen DeWitt, it was a similar thing. They backtracked for him. He seems to be losing his cool more often.
A lot of people don't like the fact that he's named the bridge, the Tappan Zee Bridge, after his father. We only have a second or two on this one.
Yeah, they don't like it. It's not going to change. You know, in the scheme of things facing the state, that's probably very low on the list, but it certainly has ticked off a lot of people, especially in that region.
You named before, you said we were talking about the potential for a primary against Governor Cuomo. Got anybody in mind?
Well, I mean, we know that Jumaane Williams, a city councilman, has opened up a state thing, but we know Terry Gibson, a former state senator, who's lost twice in his own district. There's no, you know, we know Cynthia Nixon, an actress that no one really thinks is going to do it, but her name's been out there. And then Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, who most people now think may probably run for Congress as opposed to governor against Katko in Syracuse. So, no, I mean, there's no one behemoth that could take him out at this point. You're not going to see someone like de Blasio do it.
Okay, so finally, you got a minute here. Your assessment of this year, interesting to 1 to 10?
Probably, you know, a 7.
Really?
You know, when you have, you know, you had the arrests and indictments of people close to the governor, that's always interesting.
Sure.
You know, it's always at the end of the year, you forget how much goes on. But it's been an interesting year. I think next year could be even more interesting, given the trials, given the budget deficits, given a re-election campaign by the governor, and looming over all that, you know, a re-election campaign in the shadows of a 2020 potential presidential campaign that I'm not sure is going to happen, but certainly going to be talked about a lot.
Our guest has been the wonderful columnist for the New York Daily News, the premier political reporter, which he has been for years, and Albany bureau chief for the Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. Always fascinating to talk to you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.